this man fell in love with it and said, this is your house, Myrtle. This house is right for you, and this is where you should be. And I said, no, I don't want, it needs too much doing to it, and I don't want to come back. He said, well, you might feel you don't need this house, but this house needs you. And when he said that, that was it. So I said, okay, and he said, now, I want you to get this house fixed up. It needed a new roof, it needed rewired, it needed plastering and a new kitchen put in. And we made it again into two houses, and my two daughters moved into the house next door. They had been living in an apartment that they didn't like, and for them it was like coming home too. So I have my family, I have my house and my privacy, and my house has all been done up just exactly the way I like it. And my daughters are next door. Didn't he restore to me the years that the lotus had eaten? In the most unexpected way. I was talking to a teacher of Christian Science once about supply. I said, it's my worst problem. And he said, well, you have to look for it in the fish's mouth. I said, the fish's mouth? He said, you know where that is, the most unexpected place. And that's where it was, in the fish's mouth. The most unexpected place. You know, it's right to restore a house, a room, or a piece of furniture, or a person. Because any time we do that, any time we restore order from disorder, we're putting God's law of redemption and restoration into action. Mrs. Eddy said, order is heaven's first law. So we want to live in heaven, and we do. And heaven is the consciousness of God's love and beauty. Then we have to express order in our lives. And if we say to ourselves, but I'm the most disorderly person, you're denying your true Christ-like selfhood. God never made a disorderly, untidy, lazy, apathetic person. You're denying your own sonship, so you have to restore that. And if your house doesn't need that doing to it, maybe you could help somebody else to do theirs, or do it for your church, or something in your world to bring more beauty into our world. Plant more flowers. I was reading just before I came away Irvine Tomlinson's book about Mrs. Eddy. And she said, you know, that every home should have flowers and vines. And I believe that too, so that we can see that the kingdom of heaven has already come. It is here, right now. Now, before I get on to the next bit, I promised my friends I would tell you a joke that I told them last night. It's a bit corny, but it's nice. There was a policeman in Northern Ireland, and he was walking along this road when he suddenly saw a man coming along with two penguins. He was holding each one by the hand. So the policeman stopped and looked at him, and the man said, look what I found. He said, I was walking down the road and I saw these two penguins, and they wanted to cross the road and I helped them. He said, but I don't know what to do with them. The policeman said, well, why don't you take them to the zoo? Oh, he said, that's a brilliant idea. Good, I'll take him to the zoo. So off he went, and the next day the policeman was walking down the same road. He meets the man with the two penguins by the hand. He said, I thought I told you to take those two penguins to the zoo yesterday. He said, I did. He said, it was great. I'm taking to the cinema today. Well, I told you it was corny, didn't I? Right. Now, right now, the Christian Science movement is going through a very dark period, just like I was in my life. And what's happening in our movement is hurting a lot of people. A lot of people are getting sick because of this. And I want you to remember that it's not the things that other people are doing or not doing, but that you're letting it upset you. I let it upset me for quite a while till I saw what I was doing. It was interfering with my healing practice. And I said to myself, I refuse to be disturbed. Our master said, you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not disturbed. That's the important thing. Don't let it get to you, because you're fighting error's battle for it if you do that. Say to yourself, no, I have work to do. I have healing work to do, and I'm going to get on with it. I'm not going to let myself be disturbed in any way by this. God's law of redemption and restoration is present and in operation in the Christian Science movement, right where all this unhappiness appears to be going on. Right there is God's law of redemption and restoration. And remember that there's no condemnation in God's law. So let there be no condemnation for anybody, because it will only hurt us. Has God lost his own power to care for his own? Aren't we believing that individuals are responsible for the welfare of our church? It's God's church. God is responsible. If we believe in a sick church, you'll suffer with a sick body, because our church is our church body. And the members of our church are the organs of our body. And if we believe in sick or diseased or dishonest or ugly members, then we believe in diseased organs in our church, and we can't afford to do that. A Christian Science practitioner has to go to see someone who's very ill, lying in a bed very ill. Is she going to see that person as a sick person and then try to heal them? She'd never do it. And so it is with our church. You can't see a sick church and then try to heal it. The spiritual idea of church is the structure of truth and love, a divine and holy idea, and it is intact, the perfect, pure church, which is God's church, and he's controlling. You know, Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, and this used to help me in my own country, she says, asking God to be God is a vain repetition. God is the same yesterday and today and forever. And he who is immutably right will do right without being reminded of his province. The wisdom of man is not sufficient to warrant him in advising God. Who would stand before a blackboard and pray the principle of mathematics to solve the problem? The rule is already established, and it is our task to work out the solution. Shall we ask the divine principle of all goodness to do his own work? His work is done, and we have only to avail ourselves of God's rule in order to receive his blessing, which enables us to work out our own salvation. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it says, and if they were all one member, where were the body? But now are they many members, yet but one body. And the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much more, those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon these we bestow more abundant honor, and our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. For our comely parts have no need, but God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it, or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now ye are the body of Christ. We hear a lot in our movement about lectures, for instance, that they're for the public, they're for the non-scientist, and our services should be, everything's for the non-scientist. Well, I'm beginning to think that charity begins at home. And I think we scientists need to stick together more and love each other more and hold up each other's arms. Because Mrs. Eddy said, are we really grateful for the good already received? Then we shall avail ourselves of the blessings we have and thus be fitted to receive more. I think when we start cherishing and loving each other more and helping each other, if we see a member of our church who's sick, instead of thinking, well, they haven't asked me to pray and I really shouldn't interfere, go home and clear your own thought and say to yourself, I can't see a sick member in my church body. I refuse to see it. Clear your own thought of it, and that will help your own church. And when we start healing and loving and helping each other, Jesus said, that's how I know you're my disciples, if you have love one for another. So let that charity just begin at home. I've got lost here. Have you ever stopped to think how discouraging it was for Jesus' church when he was crucified? When his disciples went there and they watched this man who had walked on the waves and healed every known disease, who had fed the multitudes, who had raised people from the dead, and they watched him being crucified and mocked. Can you imagine what that must have been like for them? They must have felt that they couldn't go back to face people. How could they tell anybody again about this wonderful man? Where was his God? Had his God let him down? They decided, you know, they'd have to go back to fishing. There was nothing left for them. But then Jesus rose. What an experience that must have been, to see him rise again and come and talk to them. They must never have feared death again or believed in death again or doubted, and they went out and they healed and they preached. Well, our movement has been going through this crucifixion. And mortal mind is mocking and saying, well, there's not much healing going on in Christian Science, and they're not getting on with each other, and they've no money and all sorts of things. Are we going to believe all this? C-H-U-R-C-H. You are is in the middle of church. You are church. Wouldn't matter if you were the only Christian Scientist in the world and all the other churches were closed. You could start Christian Science again. All you have to do is heal somebody. So why wait till all the doors are closed? Start healing somebody. And it says that he appeared to his disciples. And one definition of appear means to become clear in the mind, to manifest itself, to become visible. And this is what happened when they saw him risen. It became clear in their mind that he really was no ordinary man, that he was the Christ, and that death couldn't finish him off. We need that clear in our mind, that we are the same Christ. What was true for him was true for all, and that's what he was telling us. So we have to resurrect our true Christ-like identity and the identity of everybody else's. That same hatred that tried to crucify our beloved Master is trying to crucify the Christ in Christian Science right now, and we must not fall for it, because the power that filled the garment's hem is ever more the same. One day when I was feeling a bit down about the things in our movement, I had this little calendar on my desk, and I pulled out the page, and then I read it. And there's a Bible verse that says, "Is my hand shortened at all that it cannot redeem? Or have I no power to deliver?" America's famous Negro leader, Frederick Douglass, once delivered a speech in Boston when the situation of Negroes was particularly grim. He described their situation in these words, "We cannot return to Africa. That would never solve our problem. We cannot go to Canada. The climate does not suit us. Here in America, we are deprived of all rights. We suffer threats and are ill-treated." The longer he spoke, the darker the picture became. His audience was moved, and when he finally sat down, a deathly silence reigned. Then suddenly there stood up a Negro woman, grown old through hard work and much suffering, who asked in a loud voice, "And is God dead, Frederick?" A murmur ran through the hall. It was as if suddenly many lamps had lit up, and the dark picture Douglas had painted had vanished. Through this simple woman, the attention of all present focused on the power of Almighty God, who can change every situation according to His will. We know that within a short time, the Negro population was granted human rights and freedom by means of special laws. Is it not often the case in our lives that we only see the problems that gather over us like black clouds? As long as we look at circumstances, we will not be happy, nor will we find joy in the Lord. But if we remember our Almighty God and His power, everything changes rapidly. We know that He loves us, and that all things, even our difficulties, work together for good. Mary Baker Eddy was, and I'm sure she still is, a faithful disciple of our Master. She followed Him so closely that she became like Him. And because of her understanding of God, she too, through her wonderful discovery of Christian Science, has helped to redeem many from a false concept of God and man, and has restored them to their true identity as God's perfect spiritual ideas and the true concept of God as a tender, caring, loving, all-powerful, infinite presence. She was truly chosen by God, for only one so close to Him could have gained such vision and understanding and had the courage and unselfishness to give it to our world. Even though she suffered much in doing so, she'll never be forgotten, nor her good name ever be besmirched. Christian Scientists love her because of her closeness to God and his beloved Son, and because each and every one of us here could tell how our lives were redeemed and restored through the wonderful teaching that she has given to the world. You know, God's love also redeems and restores our bodies, our physical bodies. A few years ago when I was lecturing, I was having dinner with this woman and she told me a story. She had been a Christian Science nurse and she and her husband hadn't any children and they adopted this little girl. And this little girl loved Christian Science. She was a great little Christian Scientist and she went with her mother on her rounds when she went to visit her patients. And when the child was about 10, the mother had recently become a Christian Science practitioner. I think she'd been in the practice about 2 years. She said her practice wasn't going very well, and she didn't see much healing. But one day, she and the child were alone in the house, and they were going to have some visitors, and she needed to move a king-sized bed into another bedroom. And she asked the little girl, who was then about 10 or 11, if she could help her to do it. But as they were going through the door, the bed was too heavy for the child, and she dropped it on her mother's foot. And it severed a toe and the whole side of her foot. The woman screamed out in pain, and the little girl immediately shouted out, "Mommy, don't look, don't look. I heard you telling your patients that God's law of restoration is always present and in operation." And the child went over and got tissues and lifted the toe and the piece of foot and threw it in the waste bin. She helped her mother to get into bed and she kept telling her mother, "We don't need to tell anybody about this because Daddy's away on business and you can do your practice in bed, Mommy, and I'll help you." And this little child helped her mother, and they worked that out. And within months, they watched her toe and the side of her foot grow. But she said it was more than her foot that was restored. It was her absolute faith and trust in God. She said it did wonders for her practice, because she began to see that with God, all things are possible. And that's as true for each and every one of you as it was for her. Right. Now to finish up with, Mrs. Eddy tells us many times how to bring God's law of redemption and restoration into operation in our lives. And nowhere does she do it better than on page 354 of Miscellaneous Writings, when she says, "A little more grace, a motive made pure, a few truths tenderly told, a heart softened, a character subdued, a life consecrated, would do what? Would restore the right action of the mental mechanism and make manifest the movement of body and soul in accord with God." Now, if everybody here went home today and wrote that out on a card, and you need to do that because this is a very hard thing to work with, you keep forgetting it. Write it out in a card, put it in your pocket or your pocketbook or whatever, and make yourself work with it. Even if you only do one a day or one a week, one until you're really doing it, and then get on to the next one. I've tried this time and time again. Believe me, it's hard. Right. Now, here's the first one. A little more grace. Now, how can we express a little more grace? Well, I was thinking about this when my kids were young and I was saying, well, like, what does that mean, a little more grace? How do you be more graceful? And then one morning I was calling them all to get up for school. Are you lot up? And I thought, a little more grace, that is not the way to do it. So I began to see that you could apply it in the most simple ways, a little more grace. The way I was doing it certainly wasn't grateful, and I really tried hard to be more graceful. In everything that I spoke and in everything that I thought, because sometimes our thoughts are not very graceful towards other people. I saw I needed the grace to stop gossiping, criticizing, the grace to terminate long telephone conversations, the grace to remain silent when it wasn't necessary to speak at all. It made a great difference, but believe me, I'm still having to work at it. It takes a long time. But that's the only way to get rid of our bad habits. To be graceful is to be full of grace. Wouldn't we all love to be full of grace? Do we even say grace at the table? How often do we forget to do even that? That's another way to do it. Think grace, speak grace, and be grace in action. Number two is a motive made pure. What, for instance, is your motive for having Christian Science treatment? Is it for physical healing, a new job, a partner, or more money? Well, that's why our treatment doesn't work. We haven't purified our motive. Our motive must always be to understand God better and always to identify ourselves and others correctly. Identify the structure of truth and love properly. For instance, how are you going to structure the next sentence? The next conversation you have. That's church in action. How are you going to structure your next conversation? Number three, a few truths tenderly told. How often do we tell the truth but not very tenderly? I used to sit round the breakfast table with my kids reading a lesson. They're lying all over the table, and I would say, do you hear that? That means you. Have you got that? Not very tenderly, you know. I have a friend, and when her little girl was nearly three, she was being very naughty one day, and my friend was very busy, and she was getting a bit fed up, and she said to her, Cheryl, you are not a naughty little girl. You're God's happy child. And you're happy and you're free. And Cheryl looked up at her and she said, I'm not free, I'm 2 1/2. We have to tell the truth tenderly. I mean, how often do you sit and do the lesson and you wonder if some of the members of your church do the same lesson? You wonder, are they getting the message? Well, that's not tenderly told. And sometimes we use the truths of Christian Science and the Bible to make a point to get at somebody. And that will never bless us or our brother man. Our Master said, love one another as I have loved you. Tenderness helps us to bring love into action. And Mrs. Eddy says, tenderness accompanies all the might of spirit. Do you remember an old song called Try a Little Tenderness? And I hope all you guys are listening to this now. She may be weary, Women do get weary wearing the same shabby dress. So if she's weary, try a little tenderness. But women need to do that too sometimes, you know. I heard a lecturer in Northern Ireland once, and the lecturer told us a story about a man who'd been a businessman all his life, and then he retired, and then he became ill with arthritis. And it got worse and worse. He could hardly walk, and his wife kept telling him to go to a practitioner, and he said, "No, I don't need a practitioner. I'll work it out for myself." But he was getting worse, till he finally he was going up the stairs on his behind. And his wife said to him, "Well, listen, either you go to a practitioner or you get a doctor, but you do something." So he went to the practitioner, and the practitioner said to him, "I want you to study the definition of oil." And the first word was gentleness. She said to him, "Would you call yourself a gentleman?" He said, "Of course." He said, "I've been a businessman all my life." She said, "I didn't ask you a word. Were you a businessman? I asked you, are you a gentleman? Are you gentle?" Oh, he said, "I'll have to go home and think about that one." So he went home, and it took him weeks to think about it. But he began to realize that he wasn't gentle. He wasn't gentle with his own wife. And only when he began to watch his thinking did he realize that he wasn't gentle. And so he began to put gentleness into everything he did. So gentleness and tenderness is like oil. It oils the works. And if you put it to work, you'll just see the difference that it can make in your life. And when it makes a difference, I want you to write me a letter and tell me about it. I don't want you to write and say it didn't make any difference, because you haven't been doing it right then. Right, number four is a heart softened. My goodness, how we need this one. With so much concern in the world today about heart disease, we need to be more tender-hearted, more soft-hearted, more forgiving. Because hardened thoughts and attitudes lead to hardened arteries. We need to be soft and gentle. A heart softened. You know, Christian Scientists can be the most critical people in the world because we expect too much from each other. We get so uptight when the member of our church does something. And if our neighbor did the same thing, it wouldn't bother us. It's because we think they should know better. They're Christian Scientists, but we're judging and criticizing and condemning all the time. And we need to soften our hearts and our attitudes. And, you know, we have to let love circulate. If we want good circulation, we have to let love circulate. Instead of letting stubbornness and pride keeping us from loving. If we're not loving, we're not living. Because love alone is life. Only when you're loving are you really living. And you're only loving when you see everybody as a child of God. A character subdued. Now, what does that mean? Well, how often do we apologize for our human character? We say, "I can't help it. That's the way I am. I'm lazy, untidy, weak, nervous, shy, or even loud and funny." That's your human character getting in the way of your true sonship. Don't let it do that to you. Once we subdue this human character, one characteristic I had to overcome was being too outspoken. From a child, I was like that. You know, I was always arguing about religion in the church I went to. I'd argue with the ministers, and I prided myself on that until one time, and it wasn't too many years ago, someone told me that I'd hurt her many, many years before. And this woman had nursed this hurt all these years. And I felt ashamed that, you know, I hadn't learned to be quiet and not to speak when I didn't need to. I thought it was right to be open. Sometimes it is right, but sometimes it's not. So we have to know when it is right and really listen. So we have to subdue that character and let our true Christ-like selfhood come forth. And now the most important one of all is a life consecrated. Is your life really consecrated to God? Truly your whole life, every day, every week, every month, every hour, or just when it suits you? Do you think that you could tithe some of your time, even 4 hours a week, and say, I'm going to take 4 hours a week, and I'm really going to pray for our movement. I'm going to pray for everybody in it to know that they're the child of God and that God is governing. Or I'm going to pray for a world belief. It can be any world belief. It can be the disease called cancer. It can be any disease or any world problem or young people or drugs or whatever. But boy, what a difference you would make. Have you, for instance, how many of you could honestly say to me that you take time to pray for our practitioners and lecturers and teachers and people in high office in our movement? Can anybody put up their hand and say, honestly, I do? Yeah. You know, one night I was living in England, and I had a very bad problem, and I had a very bad hemorrhage, and I was alone in the house, and I couldn't get out of bed, and I was really ill. And my husband was chasing me everywhere I went, and I was feeling so hopeless that I felt I would have to end my life. Because although I was praying in Christian Science, I didn't seem to be getting anywhere. And I felt so homeless and so alone. And I looked up the journal, and there were not many practitioners in the area that I lived. They were quite a bit away, and I really didn't know who to call. I was in bed. And I remember lying there crying and saying, well, my Father has always helped me and He knows my need and He'd show me the way. And the telephone went. And this woman said, you don't know me, but I'm a fellow practitioner. I live in the south of England. She said, your son goes to school with my daughter. He's in the same class. She said, I decided to take today to pray for all the practitioners in the world. And I've been praying for them all day. And when my day's work was done, your name has come to me 5 times, and I don't know why. And I said, well, I'll tell you why, and I told her my problem. That woman and her husband drove 200 miles through the night, and they came up to me, they nursed me, they fed me, they bathed me and washed me and stayed in a guest house nearby until I was on my feet. And I realized that was something I'd never done. But I've done it since. Believe me, one night when things were bad in Africa, I decided to pray for the practitioners and the teachers in Africa to know that they were enough to meet that situation. And you know, that night before I went to bed, I had 2 calls for help from Africa. And I didn't know anybody in Africa. And they didn't know me. They got my name in the journal. You see the power of thought? Now, each of us is an absolute powerhouse. If we were sitting doing that, be like beacon lights of truth going out and blessing our world. You don't have to leave it all to the practitioners. We're all practitioners, and all you have to do is practice. Or you can pray for your government instead of, like we all do, knock the government. Start praying for them and know who is governing and that they're His children too, and they all reflect the one mind, so they do have this intelligence. And what a difference this would make to the cause of Christian Science if everybody here declared every day, Christian Science is the truth, and Christian Science heals quickly, effectively, and permanently. And I know that it heals, and every child of God everywhere knows that it heals. What a difference that would make if you would do that instead of saying, there's no healing going on, it's not like it used to be. You're malpracticing on yourselves and on your practitioners. Claim that every truth being declared or even read anywhere in the world at this moment must bear fruit and bring God's law of restoration into action. This sort of dedication by everyone here today would certainly restore the right action of the mental mechanism and make manifest the movement of body, church body, and soul in accord with God. And this work wouldn't just restore our movement to God's true purpose for it, but it would change the life of each person here today. Your life would be completely changed. It would never be the same. If you just put these six requirements to work constantly and consistently in our lives. Now, we have thought and talked a lot today about God's law of restoration. And I know that this law of restoration is present and in operation in your minds, in your bodies, in your lives, in your church, right here and right now. Just like it is in the trees that seem dead in the winter, but all of life is there. That law of restoration is present and in operation in your body, your minds, your life, your church, your community, your world. And I accept this truth fully for each and every person here today. I know that you're all God's beloved children, that He created you perfect, whole, pure, intelligent, satisfied, peaceful, joyful, healthy, eternal, ageless, timeless, deathless, completely spiritual. That's the way you are. The way you always were, and the way you always will be. This truth redeems and restores.